Next is an afternoon question and answer session given on January 1st, 1993 in Gidanagi.
Now is for questions and answers. Then briefly I can tell you about the next 5 days, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th. I've planned my own schedule to be available for the devotees in meetings twice a day in these upcoming days. So at 10:30 every morning over at the house where I'm staying, Cheja Prakash Prabhu's house, anyone who wants to come can come. And we can just talk. In other words, I will not have something prepared in terms of a reading. All right, you don't have to drag her. I won't have anything prepared like a reading or a lecture, but I can discuss anything with you. In other words, I'm not going to be meeting with devotees individually, so anything you wanted to talk with me individually and you're willing to discuss in a meeting like that, you can come and we can talk about it. But if there's something very individual and private, that we'll have to do that with letters. I have an idea of what these meetings would be like, but we'll have to see how it actually goes. So that's in the morning, 10:30. And then in the evening, I don't know exactly when, around 5 or 6. Then we'll have meetings here. And they are programs. The first, tomorrow night, Mata Mangala will show a slideshow of our travels during the last year. And I can try to narrate it. And then one night we'll have kirtan, and we'll have bhajan, and probably the last night, again a program of questions. So that's for the next 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th, next 4 days. And then the Gidanagari Institute starts after that. And I'll be teaching one class for 7 days on the life and teachings of Prabhupada. And after this talk tonight, for about an hour, then there'll be a puppet show in Shringa, and Sangha Thakur will put on. And I thank everyone for coming and making this Vyas Pooj day success. All right, so any questions? Yes, question please.
Sometimes it's hard for me to get enthusiastic to preach because I don't think my realization is so very great. How can I get past that?
Any particular kind of preaching or all preaching?
Well, Yes, talking to people individually, I guess.
That reminds me of an exchange I had with Prabhupada just after he gave me sannyas. And I wrote to him something about that I was shy to preach or something like that. And he said, in the beginning, I also thought like this. He said, but don't be afraid to speak. If you're sincere, Krishna will help you. And then he said that we're not cheating anyone, but we should be confident and even bold, because knowing that we're representing Krishna. So you said that because you lack realization. If we lack the knowledge, even basic knowledge and faith, then we can't preach. There is a point where we're too neophyte to preach. I also remember saying that. I remember being in Prabhupada's room in 26 Second Avenue. He was mentioning something about how Mukunda was on the West Coast and was doing some preaching, speaking to people. And I said something like, well, that sounds very wonderful. I don't think I could do that. And he said something to the effect that in the beginning you'll not be able to preach. So, but you will. The time will come when you will be able to preach. So, but that stage should be passed through rather quickly, of being actually unable to preach, because we would be, rather than convince somebody else, they would convince us. So we're warned not to try to preach too early. But it doesn't take very long to see through their arguments and to really have something to say to people about Krishna. So at that point, even if you lack realizations and or you're shy and so on, you can do it. So you shouldn't think, it'd be a false humility to think I'm not very advanced, so I shouldn't speak. But whatever little knowledge you have, you can give it to others. And then, honestly feeling that lack of realization, you can, in tactful ways, admit it to other people, that, of course, I'm not a very advanced devotee, and then say what Krishna says and what the great devotees in the parampara say, so that you don't feel you're cheating or that you're speaking without realization. And you'll find, as you do it, as you practice it, that you certainly can do it. And this knowledge is so rich that we can convey it and get better at it. The more you preach, the better you'll get at doing it. So admit that lack of realization in your preaching, and you'll still be left with much knowledge to pass on. If people say to you, well, are you a pure devotee, or things like that, have you seen Krishna? These things shouldn't rattle you or disturb you. You just can freely admit your position and go on preaching. With logic and with shastra, that's the idea. What my actual realization is not the subject matter of discussion. We haven't sat down with a person to tell them how advanced you are or how you're not advanced. That's not the subject. The subject is Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You're a spirit soul. Why don't you surrender to Krishna? Then some people, they may find it difficult to do that one to one or any or public speaking. So that's why I asked you what kind of preaching. So if you don't like to do that or find it's very difficult, that may be. Well, everyone should take a chance to somehow spread Krishna consciousness. So you can always do something. You can distribute prasadam, which is preaching, or go with the Harinam party. It's not that you have to be a public speaker to be a preacher or a book distributor, and those are the only kind of preaching. But so much preaching can be done by different persons. And of course that's our Foundacharya's mood, the preaching mood too. It is not enough. I was looking over some Vyas Pooj talks he gave. One talk in Hamburg, he told the devotees, it is not enough that you get the knowledge from me, but you now you have to give this knowledge to others. Yes. Well, you're referring to, I said that when we agree to chant at least 16 rounds every day, it means actually every 24 hours. One devotee was asking yesterday if he could chant in advance. When he sees a busy day coming, can he chant tomorrow's rounds today? So we can't do it before, or we can't do it after. Every 24 hours, chant again. So the interpretation was that on a regular basis, I don't chant 16 rounds and I build up a debt. So you're describing the very busy activities that you may have which prevent you from chanting 16 rounds. All I can do is just repeat the orders of the spiritual master, and it's up to you to figure the other out. Last summer there was these two tapes. The Inner Life of a Preacher were at a seminar in Belgium. After the seminar was over, all the participants, meaning all the speakers and all the audience, they all had one final session in which they were asking questions. So one lady asked me a question about, similar to yours, how can we actually do it? And she brought up the fact of taking care of the children was hard. So I said something to the effect that chanting was more important, was the most important thing. And then it's created a kind of a controversy. And her husband stood up and said that this sounded like some kind of old-fashioned ISKCON reactionary attitudes. And someone said, this is not, you're advocating neglect of children. And the kind of things that I always think I don't do. I think I'm trying to be considerate, and I know that some of my disciples don't chant 16 rounds because of different burdens like child caring, and I don't condemn them or anything, but But I can't change the philosophy to suit the Americans, as Prabhupada said, or to suit anybody. So I can just, like a parrot, I can just say you have to chant 16 rounds, and then you have to figure out when to cook or when not to cook, or how to chant your rounds on the day that you have a program. But every 24 hours you should chant 16 rounds. Of all the instructions of the spiritual master, that's the most important. So if regularly this is what's happening, then whatever wonderful things you're doing, they should be examined. That we're doing such wonderful preaching and such responsible activity, but somehow we can't chant these 16 rounds. Then something is wrong about such a program. Running here and there and not having time to chant Krishna's name. But I know it's not easy to figure out. Like Prabhupada said about the farms, farm life. He said farm life is to simplify life, save time and chant Hare Krishna. But devotees on the farms find they're working so hard that they don't have time to chant Hare Krishna. But life is meant for that in Krishna consciousness, somehow simplifying activities so that we can chant Hare Krishna. In contrast to the karmis, who they have no time for that. No time, the disease of the modern man. Prabhupada wrote one essay. We have to do that, but find time, chant, unchant, or save time and chant Hare Krishna. So if we're doing other things and we don't have time, then there are things like we talk a lot, we walk, we sleep, we eat. So all of those things can somehow be examined. Maybe you can take time from all the time that you take talking so many things and chant Hare Krishna instead. He's referring to some of the things I wrote in the book Shack Notes about that I felt I had over the years as a devotee practicing. I hadn't expressed my intuitive side, but had more just done things that you're supposed to do. And as a result, I felt kind of imbalanced and wanted to express Krishna consciousness in a natural way. So he's applying that to himself and saying that at what stage, or even in an early stage, is it advisable to try to practice Krishna consciousness more spontaneously than just following the the program of doing what is authorized and regulated. Well, I think we have to do that. It's not just at a later stage we do it. Although there is a natural progression also, and a time when it would be more appropriate. In one letter, Prabhupada says, compares the new disciple with a young son of the father. So he says, in the beginning, he's not given any freedom. He's just told what to do. Because he'll misuse freedom, just like a little child. But then as he grows up, he's given more freedom. And he wants it, and he has to have it. And he can use it rightly. So when it's time, we have to change all, especially we Westerners who were committing so many sinful activities, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we have to just do. And that we usually do with great enthusiasm. We take to the austerities, we take to the regulative program, we very submissively follow temple authorities, and we get a great zest out of it, feeling that now we're getting rid of our anarthas and this sloppy so-called freedom that we were trying to indulge in. It wasn't getting us anywhere. Now we're regulated following Krishna. So that will be best. But then after we're practicing for a while and we become cleaner in body, mind, and words, and if we come more to the sattvic level of devotional service, then the spirit soul is a free spirit and wants to act not just what he's supposed to do, but what he wants to do. And it's like this, we're a whole person, and we want to surrender that whole person to Krishna, not just part of it. So part of our person is intuitive nature and spontaneous nature, joyful nature of doing what we want to do freely, but doing it for Krishna. Not that it always have to be afraid of that side, which in the beginning, as I say, may be more proper. But the more total our surrender can be, then there's nothing being repressed, and everything is being expressed in devotional service. Because the quality of love that we want to offer to Krishna certainly will be spontaneous, intuitive. For example, in dressing the deities, there's Archan. One term we call Archan, the worship of the deities. So how do you dress Radha Damodar? You find out from the pujaris what's the standard. We use this dress, we use that dress. You put the feather exactly over here. You put the flute like this. And so when you do it like that, you do it just because that's the way they do it. That's the way you're told to do it. And there may not be so much bhava or feeling that I'm actually dressing Krishna. But then if the archan turns into actual feeling, seva, service, then you look to Krishna just like a cowherd boy would look to Krishna. Where would you like that peacock feather? How does it actually look nice? And I think it will look nice like this. And I think your turban should look like this. And then there's a more personal feeling. So then intuitive feeling, spontaneous feeling. Not just doing the program. So when to do that, that may take experience. And when we step forward in the beginning, it's very daring, and we make a mistake, doing something whimsical and so on. But gradually, when we learn who we are and how we want to serve Krishna, then it is certainly a part of devotional service. And neither do we, at that stage, abandon the standard practices. But at the same time, more internally, we express this. But it's a fact. I was talking about something that has to be handled carefully. It can be misused. But at a certain point, we have to use it, or else you'll only be partly surrendered to Krishna.
That can also be mistaken for something that it's not, that's something that we can do, almost as something tangible, you know, kind of almost compulsive about it in some way. It's not to say that it's bad, but just that there can be an imbalance.
We can take it to be something that it isn't. With
thinking that we're more advanced, that it's just advancement, you know, where sometimes it's a kind of
the material thing to be compulsively exact in following all the rules and regulations. Yeah. There was one psychologist did a what do they call it, questionnaire of devotees some years ago. And this was at a time when the controversy was really at the height about that actually devotees of Hare Krishna are brainwashed and are very abnormal. So this it was very favorable results that he got. It was in Los Angeles, and showed that the devotees were normal in every way. But one way they weren't normal is that they tended to be very compulsive persons, obsessive, compulsive. But even that, although this was his results, the psychologist he presented that favorably and said this trait appears outstanding in any. Big achievers in the world. You want to be a lawyer, if you want to be an athlete, if you want to be an entertainer, a politician, you have that. So it can be used in Krishna's service. But yes, it's not necessarily a sign of top spiritual advancement that one is very fastidious about every rule and regulation and always gets up very early and everything is pukka in his outward activities. It can be used in Krishna's service, but it's not ultimately the test. The test is, that which attracts Krishna, who is saying, is the bhakti. So we may think that we're advanced for certain traits that we have, but actually we're not advanced. And as we realize that, in different ways we become humble. All these things are good, to be a strict follower of sadhana, to be a bold preacher, to be a good intellectual with Vaishnava philosophy. They're all good, but it's not that we're so immature that we have to think, but I thought they constituted advancement in themselves. They should never be minimized in any way. That if we say that they're not the all-in-all, that this will... this will make everyone want to stop performing these activities. No, we perform them. But we know that Krishna is not necessarily captured by these things. We have to have the real heart that goes with it. So niyamagraha, niyamagraha, never giving up the rules and regulations, but not following the rules and regulations, thinking that they themselves are the end. Well, I can support what you're saying by saying, by defining self-realization. We use that term a lot, Prabhupada did. So, according to Siddhanta, what we mean by self-realization is that one understands his self to be the eternal servant of Krishna. He actually realizes it. And so that's rare, even among practicing devotees, to be self-realized. But self-realization also means knowledge of the self, which contributes to that before we reach that stage. So that will help us. Just things like we should know that we may have a tendency for being arrogant or envious or angry to others. If we don't know that, everyone else sees it, and we're just always causing commotion among devotees, disturbing them. We don't even know it because we're not introspective, and we're afraid to find out such things about ourselves. And so we just talk about self-realization in terms of the Siddhanta. Self-realization means eternal servant of Krishna. I have nothing else to learn about that. So your point is that we have to know ourselves, our capabilities and limits, the particular weaknesses we may have, and how we have to, where we have to work on them, and so on. And this will help us to function properly, to take Krishna consciousness fully, and then get the mercy of self-realization, how we're actually not even this body at all, but we're eternal servant of Krishna. In that sense, we also are introspective to know how we are serving Krishna. The other day in Philadelphia, the morning Bhagavatam class was about cheating. So we're talking about cheating and cheating tendency. So the more we can see, this would be another way to know yourself, to how am I actually practicing Krishna consciousness, or I'm cheating in different ways. Certainly, to know these things about yourself and to try to improve them will help us. We use this word Siddhanta, means the conclusions of Krishna consciousness as passed down by the acharyas. So those don't change, and anyone who changes them, he becomes he deviates from Siddhanta. That happens, but that's always rejected. Like after Lord Chaitanya's disappearance, Bhaktivinoda Thakur pointed out no less than 12 deviant sects who said that they were following Lord Chaitanya, but they weren't. So they change, but the Siddhanta doesn't change, and it's preserved by sometimes only a few faithful persons, and then it's then it becomes taken up by many, like Prabhupada, by his appearance, it was taken up by many. So there are things that can never change in the practices of faithful devotees. So to delineate, we might try to understand what those things are and how they shouldn't be changed. We don't change we chant Hare Krishna mantra, we don't make up another mantra, and so many things like that should not be changed. I believe Prabhupada said that a few times. My fear is that you will change in reference to deity worship. But then there are things that do change. And that's the nature of this material world. It's mutable, changeable. And so we have to adapt, be flexible for preaching and for practicing. I've only responded in a general way. Then you'd have to, by consultation of devotees, they have to tax their brains to see whether particular instances are those which can be changed or should not be changed. Prabhupada was flexible. If you get a good result, then he'd be willing to do something. He changed certain things to preach in America and the West. He writes in his purport that people sometimes criticize the Western devotees according to Indian standards and say, you are not doing this, you are not doing that, according to our tradition. He said they themselves cannot spread Krishna consciousness, but they criticize those who do spread. They don't know that in giving Krishna consciousness to the West, some things may have to be changed from the way they're done in India. This was in a purport in which Narada taught Dhruva how to worship the deity in the forest. He said, do all these regular principles according to whatever is possible for you in your condition. So he himself was flexible and yet very conservative in not changing things that should not be changed. It's not something to be done by anyone to change the basic things. Therefore, the more deeply you have faith in the Siddhanta, you can change something and you'll still be sticking to the Siddhanta. We should reach a point where we are unable to misrepresent Siddhanta. It's so much part of our life. So that if we change something, it's not tampering with the philosophy, it's just to present it better. But an immature devotee, if he changes, he may change the whole thing and change vital things. He doesn't know what the conclusions are, so he changes them. But a devotee who lives in the Siddhanta, he can change in order to present it better, or present it in a changing time. Nice. Why are you way back there? Dr. and Cindy.
We were just talking about self-realization and knowing of a blower than I do. I remember you wrote to me once that that's like my defense to the neck was when I get heads up with you and then you fall down and think, oh, well, I'm not worthy enough to do this. I remember I wrote to you talking about it, but how can I tell when it's truthfulness saying, oh, well, maybe that's where I really am, or just saying, oh, well, you know, I just put myself down because I think that I'm really, you know, false.
The result, Palina Puricite, the result will show us as a symptom that if I, in the name of being feeling lowly, if I'm morose and depressed because of that, and become inactive, refuse service that's offered to me, and so on. This is some kind of material state. But the spiritual humility is different than that kind of low esteem. That he wants to sweep the floor, he wants to preach, wants to do things for Krishna. That would be one way to tell the difference. Like Prabhupada encouraged me when I said, I don't think I can preach. He said, you can if you're sincere. Krishna will help you. So we have such great help. Prabhupada is there, Krishna is there. So despite my being lowly, I should surrender and serve them. And you should see how other devotees act. It's true that a devotee who's advanced thinks himself or herself lowly. So you'll be able to see how actually advanced devotees express that feeling of lowliness. And it'll probably be different than yours. Yours will be, yours meaning, say, if you're immature about it, yours will be mixed with material attitudes. And won't have such good results. So see how other devotees conduct themselves in being without pride. Kirinagar? I don't remember exactly like those examples, but there's that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita that I know that my spiritual master is a representative of Krishna, or as Prabhupada elaborates, the spiritual master is a confidential servitor or of Srimati Radharani or Lord Nityananda. But still, he presents himself very humbly. I can't remember the verse exactly. It's a very wonderful verse, where they're both presented. That he, like everyone else, is a servant of the Lord and sees himself very humble. But I see him as a direct representative of Krishna. So they're both true visions. As for all pervading, That depends on the level of the spiritual master. Like, who is it? I think it's the sages at Namisharanya, addressing Sutta Goswami, say, we accept you as the captain of the ship and to guide us in Kali Yuga. And they say, you are all pervading like the super soul. There's a reference to the jiva, pure devotee, being all-pervading, like the super soul. Narada Muni is like the super soul. So praising Prabhupada as Mahabhagavat, all-pervading in the sense of his instructions in ISKCON and being everyone's guru, is not exaggeration. But wherever Krishna is, the pure devotee is. Pure devotees can expand themselves into many forms. They can know past, present, and future. They can do so many things just like the Supreme Lord by His grace. But even those, not even, but especially those Mahabhagavat devotees who have that kind of capacity, they, even more than Madhyama Adhikaris, and certainly more than Kanista Adhikaris, are fixed in the deepest humility. The Kanista Adhikari, he thinks he's a devotee. That's one reason he gets into quarrels with other devotees. And then the Madhyama Adhikari, he has to think he's a devotee because he has to preach. But the Mahabhagavat, he doesn't think he's a devotee. So that presentation that the guru thinks very humble is not contradictory to others seeing that person and as you say, deifying him or seeing him as good as, in some ways, the super soul. It also has to do with whether you're talking about yourself or you're talking about other Vaishnavas. If you talk about yourself, you're not going to say, I'm all pervading like the super soul, unless you're one of these modern day bogus gurus. And they attract followers who demand that. If he says something humble, they'll go away. They want somebody, say, Guru Dev, if you touch us, can we become in touch, whatever, just by your touch, can we become liberated and so on. They want that. But the genuine devotee will never present himself as, I am this wonderful thing, I am that wonderful thing. Prabhupada said, I'm not a scholar, I'm not a great devotee, about himself. I'm just repeating the words of my spiritual master. But then when we look at his activities, then we talk in terms of how he's so empowered. Yeah. No, therefore we have to be careful about that. As this kind of passed through so many things, we passed through that deviation back in 1969, when some devotees they were preaching like that. That Prabhupada is, we haven't realized it, but actually he's God. And so whatever is said about God is true of him. He's the earth, he's the sun, and everything. He's everywhere. So the spiritual master, he's treated as good as God, but not as God. As good as God because he's the humble and confidential servitor of the Lord. So if the Lord likes, yes, Prabhupada can know what's going on here, he can know what's going on in the heart of any devotee, especially where they call for him, where they want his presence, he can come. He can come where his devotees are and where they want him. There was that dialogue that devotee asked Prabhupada, when you're not present after your disappearance, can we get instructions from you? Yes, he said, in my books. the devotee said, not only in your books, but like the super souls in our hearts and can give us instructions like that. And Prabhupada said, yes, it depends on your purity. So it's not his function like he's the super soul in everyone's heart, but he can be in every devotee's heart, every one of his devotees' hearts. And he doesn't maintain the whole universe and have the consciousness of all living beings as Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, does. But he can be like that where devotees, where his devotees are, where his devotees remember him. He reasons ill who say that Vaishnavas die. So the spiritual master is present. It can continue to bless us and give us advancement. And we can develop our relationship with him. And then ultimately, the spiritual master, we sing Sri Radhika Madhava Yarapara Nakunja Yuno Ratikeli Siddhai. The spiritual master is in the spiritual world. He's still in this material world, giving instructions to the devotees, and he's in his Nitya Leela. And so we can go and be with him. So yes, it's... We don't really understand fully what is the spiritual master and his relationship with Krishna and our relationship with him. His teaching us in this world is one aspect. Our joining him in Krishna's pastimes, that's the ultimate stage of. Joining the spiritual master and engaging with the spiritual master. Not just in terms of what you've been hinting at, all-pervading, all-power. That aspect is there in inconceivable ways. He's not an ordinary man. But the even more important is the sweetness of his intimacy with Krishna. Krishna Nandaya Dhimahi. I meditate on my spiritual master. In Guru Devaya Vidmahe, Krishnandaya Dhimahi, Tinal Guru Pachodya. I know, Vidmahe, that my spiritual master is Krishnandaya. He gives Krishna pleasure in the intimate relationship in Krishna's Leela. I meditate on him in that way. And I wish to know him in that form and to join with him. So he's the mailman delivering Krishna's message. And according to the particular spiritual master, he's something more. Prabhupada is a spiritual master. His disciples are spiritual masters. There's so many spiritual masters. There are so many devotees. Prahlad is a devotee. Prahlad Maharaj is a devotee. Yudhisthira is a devotee. And Prabhupada said, we're all devotees. So there are different devotees. Radharani is a devotee. So there are different spiritual masters. So we're going to have time daily to talk some more about these things. And I know some devotees, they have to travel tonight. So we should have this puppet show. So where are the puppeteers?
My puppet partner is not being here yet.
Sangar, that is? Or,
oh, he's here. My daughter's not here.
Hmm. So you can't go on without her, huh?
Okay.
Puerto Rico.